You know that melodrama I was talking about? God, I wish it would end.
Maybe here's your chance.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210. Today's episode are Season 10, Episode 26, The Penultimate, and Season 10, Episode 27, Ode to Joy. And now, here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Budding.
We're here.
I know. I feel like we should have cut a pomp and circumstance cue for Dave to play since finally made it.
I kind of can't believe it. I mean, it's been years.
Yeah. Yeah. 2015, right?
Yeah. It's been four and a half years, something like that.
Oh, my God. Well, we did it.
Not yet.
Let's not jinx it. Who knows?
Okay. Let us start with our C plot. In all caps, get out of here, Noah. Jesus, I really mean it, you guys.
Yeah, why?
I'm gonna do it as fast as I can. Ellen's moved into her own place. Caitlin's living with her. Noah's helping set up. Time again for Ellen to be weird about the relationship, this time by pressing Noah to commit to her for Caitlin's sake. He'll think about it. But when we see them next, it's right after Noah has helped Ellen out by watching Caitlin while Ellen was at work and having a great time turning Caitlin's room into a rocket ship. And Ellen thinks this is proof Noah's going to make a commitment to her, but surprise, he says he can't right now. Cut to Noah cutting in to dance with Donna at the wedding reception. Spoiler, we will get to it. At the start of their conversation, he's planning to move away to ? For a sailing race, but literally 9 seconds later decides he does want to commit to Ellen and that he should tell her immediately. So off he goes to do that, off screen, of course, and that's a series wrap on Vincent Young. What a waste of time.
Yeah, and his, like, Elvis Presley blue-black hair dye. Why? Who cares?
Yeah, but just one more thing. Before he leaves, he gives Donna a forehead kiss, of course, and the camera follows him leaving. Like, he sort of stops and on the edge of the dance floor and looks back with, like, pleasure and nostalgia and stuff, and there's zero acknowledgement from anyone else in the cast, including Kelly, who has to brush past him on her way back into the reception, like, and doesn't even say, like, bye. It's like he's completely marooned even in his farewell to the show. Hilarious.
Buddy.
On to the B plot. Work-life balance woes continue plaguing Steve and Janet. So remember in the last episode when Janet wanted to sell the beat and Steve didn't, and that was where we left it? Well, now Janet's at breakfast telling Steve she's been working on new ideas for Nouveau and asking if he wants to hear them. He is very dismissive, so apparently they made this decision off screen. Why?
Yeah, like, why do we have to keep watching her women, colon? They really can't have it all struggles if the actual conversations that anyone cares about are occurring off screen.
I don't know.
Why didn't they just move to, like, Santa Barbara?
Yeah.
Episodes ago. Like, why are you living in the Walsh house still?
Yes. Oh, I have a question about that. So before she can even try to tell Steve anything, he sees that she just finished the milk on her cereal and she apologizes and offers to give him her bowl since she can get something at work. And Steve snottily says, of course she can. She's the breadwinner. And they shove the bowl back and forth until they knock it on the floor and it breaks. And my question was, are these Jim and Cindy's dishes? Because are they?
Yeah.
Anyway, a fight ensues in clip two.
Janet, I hate what's happening to us.
No, Steve, you hate what's happening to you. Which astonishes me because I happen to think that staying home with Maddie is a privilege.
Yeah, and it's one you choose not to exercise.
That's so unfair.
Oh, give me a break. You know, I can come back later.
Don't. No one cares about you. No one cares about any of this. Say you'll come back later and then just leave. Leave town.
Yeah. But also, no. Shut up, Steve. If you added any value to your publication, you would have a good job, too, but you don't. So, At the office, Janet has just finished telling Charles how honored she is by his confidence in her when some other brassy broad strolls in who hates L.A. and parks it and acts way too familiar immediately and ignores Janet. And Charles introduces them. Her name is Ava. She's a consultant that he's hired, apparently, above Janet. We're clearly supposed to hate
her. What's her last name? Does it rhyme with Shamu?
We will clearly, we're supposed to hate her, but she does make some good points in clip three.
So, let's start with the name of your brainchild. Nouveau. How in the world did you manage to come up with the most boring name possible? Oh, I think it's catchy.
No, it's okay. I admit, right now, it's nothing. It lacks focus, it has no theme, no point of view. That's what I want you to focus on.
Who?
Both of you. But separately, I'm a firm believer in healthy competition. I want your reports by the end of the week.
What a dump.
I mean, I've always kind of liked The Office, so this is mean, but, you know, Nouveau is a bad idea, and it sounds like all that Charles has so far is, like, magazine idea TK.
Yeah.
But Janet takes off after Charles to say that she's confused about Ava's role. Apparently, Ava's from the New York office and helps with all of his acquisitions, and he trusts her judgment. And Janet asks again what the hierarchy is, and Charles just tells her to get her report ready. This is bad management. Janet, take a note of how evasive he's being and act accordingly.
Yeah, quit ski.
So then that night, Donna shows up with a dress for Janet to wear to Kelly's wedding, LOL. Ryan is in the kitchen because I guess he leaned on his dad to let him be in the finale.
Since the spinoff didn't happen.
He mentions the sale of the beat, and Steve grumbles that it's not final yet, though it will be if Janet gets her way. Donna and Randy both think that Steve has a perfect situation right now. Steve says he's not making that much money from the sale and will have to get a job soon, and Donna tells him to give himself a break and enjoy his time with Maddie, which is good advice. Janet gets home to find a plate already dished out and waiting for her, and he snits that she could have called. She snipes back. It's late. She goes upstairs. Donna follows her with a dress and offers to talk, and Janet admits she's not sure about her career or the recent choices that she has made. Again, women can't have it all. Got it? Good. Ugh. At home the next day, Steve uses Maddie as a sounding board for his doubts about staying home with her, but then she says Dada, and he flips out with joy. And he later brings Janet a cup of coffee on the couch where she has slept. She is suspicious about how chipper he is, and he starts listing all the good things in his life, including that Maddie said Dada. He's been thinking about it and has finally realized how lucky he is, and says they're going to an amusement park today. You know who loves an amusement park? An infant. What?
Yeah. Like, who can't go on do with any of the rides? Sure. And it's super noisy.
Take her to the
love
zoo,
that.
Weirdo. Anyway, Janet gets to work and finds Ava sitting on Charles's desk in his cube, both of them acting like real assholes in clip four.
Hey, what's going on?
Oh, Ava was just telling me about her idea for Nouveau. You, tell her about the column.
Oh, tilting at windmills.
I thought that we weren't supposed to share our ideas, healthy competition and all. Do you want a chair?
We can finish later.
I thought that our reports weren't due until the end of the week.
Well, Ava just was too excited to wait. And a suggestion? Stop acting like I've taken something from you.
Fucking hate this guy.
I mean, granted, that's what the money is for, but
right.
Heads up, when your intellectual property has been purchased, take the money and leave. Don't stick around.
Yeah. And from my notes, get out. It will not get better. Also in all caps.
Nope.
Then Janet has to further doubt her choices when the phone rings and it's Steve at the amusement park telling her he's sending her a photo. Okay, this would obviously be no big deal in our time, but at this point in history, we're supposed to think that Steve brought a laptop computer to the amusement park, found a phone line to plug it in at like whatever snack bar they're at, and then use that to email her a photo. Which I do not believe.
Like, no. Also, it would take like 15 minutes. It would be rendering line by line.
Yep.
Yeah.
Ugh, no. Whatever. Janet said she's missing it. Then it's Friday. Report delivery day. Steve brings her an article on celebrity mugshots, and she tells him how nervous she is about the ideas that she provided Charles for Nouveau. But it turns out she got the job. She's the new EIC. Janet's proposal had more heart than Ava's, and Charles already broke the bad news to her off screen. So bye, bitch. Steve hugs Janet as Janet instantly starts crying. She worked so hard to put the ideas together and now is freaked out about implementing them. But Steve believes in her. She knows she can do it, but the cost of losing time with Maddie is so high, but then recovers and says she's feeling sorry for herself. And sometime later, Steve brings her to an empty office space and tells her it's the location for their next publishing adventure, a desk for each of them and Maddie's playpen somewhere in the middle. So once again, they're planning to work themselves to death by not hiring anyone. Cool. Janet is worried about failing, losing their nest egg. Steve counters that at every point in their relationship, she probably wouldn't have bet on them, but everything worked out and probably so will this. And Janet pretends for a second like she thinks this is too big a risk, but she's in, and that's the end of that.
Finally.
We also have an A plot to get to, but first, we have a message for Andrea.
Katie tells us that her dear friend Andrea introduced her to this podcast, and Katie is, in her own words, desperately grateful.
Aww. To thank Andrea for her guidance and congratulate her and Katie herself and us for making it all the way through 10 seasons, Katie asked us to come up with a list of the top 5 ways the gang owes Andrea Zuckerman a debt of gratitude, and here it is.
Number 1, Andrea taught them that there are actually people worth knowing who grew up in the Valley.
Ooh, gross. Number 2, Andrea provided them an object lesson in why there's no point maintaining an unrequited crush.
Number 3, Andrea gave them opportunities to flex their makeover muscles, not just of Grandma Rose's living room, but when Andrea herself radically transformed her hair from reddish brown to brownish red.
Number 4, Andrea demonstrated why seeing through an unplanned pregnancy and marrying the second person you ever slept with in your life probably isn't a great idea.
And number 5, above all, Andrea struck a blow for public health on behalf of the gang and all their classmates with her legendary cafeteria exposé.
From all of us here and Katie, thank you to both Andreas. And now, our very last A plot. Oh. Kelly's love life drama takes a backseat to Donna and David? Seems wrong, but let's see. Kelly gets home from the funeral to Donna acting even spinnier than usual. She has big news, but swore she wouldn't announce it until she asked how the funeral for Matt's brother was. So how was it? Guys, you're not going to believe this, but apparently it was sad. Matt is doing okay. He and Kelly are still together. Kelly thinks that's right for now. Sure, for now is definitely how we all talk about our partners right before we marry them. But Donna obviously can't dig into that right now because she has to tell Kelly about David's proposal. And even though we saw Donna as she totally did not accept said proposal, she is fully wearing the ring anyway, along with a very dopey expression. Kelly thinks the gap between Donna's expectations and David's actions is hilarious. Ditto that Donna didn't accept. Donna says she loves David and knows he's the one, but needed time to think about it. I mean, I don't know what the one means in that case, but fine. Cut to the beach where David is digging something. Dylan is also present and takes forever to tell David, since he was the one who intervened in Dylan's admission, that he has finished his coursework and is going to graduate. And David is thrilled. Clip 5.
Well, congratulations. You're welcome.
Look, I understand everyone's been doing this show since they were children, but this isn't actually a rehearsal, Brian. Express an emotion.
Yeah. One that's not mild irritation at being wakened from your nap. Like, it's the series finale. Since you're probably never going to work again, and shouldn't have. Actually, he was fine in Sarah Connor Chronicles, I guess, but sure. I hope those wages are still being garnished. Like, I don't know. It's your last scenes with these people. Luke Perry's going to be dead in 2 decades. Yeah. Enjoy the time.
Anyway, not sounding like he gives a shit, David asks if Dylan is going to invite anyone to his convocation, but Dylan is not broadcasting the news. So then Steve appears to help him with whatever this is. David says he's sending a message, and it occurs to me now that the reason they had David and Noah fall out in the last episode is so that Noah could have nothing to do with any of this and be entirely siloed in his storyline, in which case You could have written him out of the show completely so long ago and should have. I'm still so mad about it.
Well, and like, did he and Tori Spelling break up?
I guess.
If so, why is he at the wedding? Like, it just, the whole timeline is very weird. Like, they have to have known
that
this was going to be the end and when it was going to be. So why not? Like, it was both extremely dragged out and extremely rushed at the end. Like, why is this happening anyway?
Yeah. Anyway, Steve asks what the occasion is, and David says he asked Donna to marry him. Steve is happy, but then David has to pout that Donna said she had to think about it. Steve says Janet had to think about it when he asked her to, and it was fine. And Dylan, who we may all recall, has also been married, has feelings about all of this in clip six.
Women suck.
Nice.
Yeah, well, that's very helpful. Thank you.
Come on, they want you to commit. When you finally do, it's not enough.
Eventually, they come around.
Janet did.
I'm sure Donna will, too.
So what are we writing here?
I suggested, consider yourself lucky.
The romantic talks. How about something short and sweet, like, marry me, I love you.
I'm pretty pleased with sugar on top.
Yeah, sugar-coated a little bit. Call it pumpkin.
I open myself up to you guys, and what do I get?
Ridicule.
Of course.
Obvious.
Just make sure you don't misspell anything, all right?
For the last time.
Last one. I mean, probably. Dave still has the sound drop, so it could creep up on us at any time. You just never
know. That's true. So after walking in on a fight between Janet and Steve, which we already heard, Matt tells Steve.
Thanks, buddy.
Matt tells Steve that his sister-in-law, Juliana.
I knew it.
Matt tells Steve his sister-in-law, Juliana, is doing okay. Steve remembers her and Patrick playing with Maddie and what a good couple they made, you know, before Patrick died. Matt says that she's pregnant, and Steve is dismayed to think about the child growing up without knowing its father, and Matt has no response except to look sad. Got to the plaza, where Kelly is hanging pictures in her office when Dylan walks in. I thought Seattle was still, like, a possibility when they left for the funeral, but, like, her name is painted on the door, so no.
Yeah. What?
Yeah. Another kind of big conversation to have happened off screen. Again, this whole thing is so off balance.
Yeah.
Whatever. Kelly reports she has 3 clients and believes in every one of them. And Dylan comments that it's important for her to believe in what she does. Like, that's what she just said. She thinks that's important to everyone. But Dylan is like, no, especially to you. And we're so close to the end. Do we really need the St. Kelly fluffing still? Also, I haven't really noticed Dylan's hair as much as Sarah has this season, but in this scene, it is unmissable in its terribleness. You can see it in the visual aids. It's like,
just, so is this like, I mean, the aggro floof, but like also the ape drape? Why? Yeah. Buddy, no.
Anyway, he brings up whatever version of, I think I want to dump Matt for you, she said last before Matt's brother died. And she reports that she hasn't talked to Matt about the state of their relationship, given, you know, his brother's sudden death. Dylan gets ready to leave, saying he's sorry for Matt's loss. But at the door, he says he talked to David about Donna. Instead of saying that he was pretty misogynistic about David's current situation, Dylan says this about David, clip 7.
He can't figure out how 2 people so obviously meant for each other can't seem to get together. Tell you the truth, neither can I.
It's because you hate each other. You've hated each other for 8 years.
Yep. You started hating each other immediately as soon as you got together.
Yeah. Like, just hate fuck each other, get it out of your systems, and go about your lives. Out of my sight.
Yeah. So Donna's on the deck when David rolls up. She's delighted to show him where someone scraped "I love Dawn" in the sand right by a beach volleyball net. Donna heteronormatively guesses that some girl must have written it for her boyfriend, and isn't that romantic? And David says Donna, it originally said "I love Donna," and she cleverly guesses he did it. He's not trying to pressure her, but diagnoses her hesitation as related to her being a romantic and wanting her wedding to be perfect. And instead of confirming that, she guesses the sand message took him all night to do. It looks like it would have taken 20 minutes, but we don't know how long it takes Donna to write anything with a paper and pen, never mind a shovel and sand. So fine. That night at Steve and Janet's, Donna asks whether Janet ever worries when her relationship isn't perfect, and Janet has to tell the dumb baby she's ecstatic when things between her and Steve are just okay. Kelly then comes home to her place to find Matt waiting for her on the deck. He had a hard day back at work because he couldn't focus. Time to bring back an old point of contention between them. He's been thinking a lot about this baby, and given Patrick's death, he thinks he needs to step up and be a father in his absence to his biological child. And down on the beach, Donna approaches David as he redoes the I love Donna message. She tells him she's no longer expecting perfection in her relationship and thinks David's great. And also says they've grown up together over the past 10 years and dealt with all kinds of obstacles in their way. And he says this, clip 8.
You know I feel the same way, right? And that my love for you hasn't changed?
I believe
that. I know we keep bringing this up. And not that they should have gotten married when they were freshmen in college, but maybe they never would have broken up if David hadn't been so horny and impatient that he cheated on her. But yeah. This is both the lie and the timeline we're supposed to believe now, and that Donna definitely believes because now she's ready to commit to him forever. And she asks him to marry her and he accepts. And there's Sarah noted in her picture for the visual aids, one last forehead kiss.
There was also a valedictory heing.
Oh, no. So the next day, they wake up in bed together. Does he look like shit? Yes, you can see this in the visual aids. Kelly calls David to cavil about the sand message and ask if Donna's seen it. Bitch, she didn't sleep at home last night. Where do you think she was if not on his dick? And then David breaks Dylan's confidence and tells Kelly about the graduation, which in fairness is probably exactly why Dylan told David. So Kelly and her weird curly hair, which is Sarah clip for the visual aids, it's really out of control, bizarre. I don't know why she looks like she has a perm all of a sudden.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I'm being punked at this point.
Yeah.
How many different stupid ways can we do it in a single double episode? Let's find out. Do we have to?
It's not supposed to. It's that hair that she's supposed to have when she calls from the beach, and it's slightly wavy. Then when she's at the hotel, it's fully curly. And then when we see her again, she's with Matt on the boardwalk and has it in a ponytail, all in the same outfit. It really does feel like we're being gaslit. Anyway, she goes to Dylan's suite as he's getting dressed for graduation and figures out that David told her. He says it's private for him, and she says she thinks that's stupid, but that she accepts and can't believe he's actually seen something all the way through. I mean, again, he did finish high school. He saw an engagement through to marriage. Maybe that's all he's seen through in his life. Fine. But he will let her take
also,
him
for... Also, if you hold him in that much contempt, stop standing so fucking close to him. He's not your fiancé.
That's true.
I never could tie one of these. Then go downstairs and get the maitre d' to do it. That's why you live in a fucking hotel. You hate him. Leave.
Well, she's not going to leave. I mean, she will leave now, but she's going to take him for dinner later. Mm. And then Kelly and Matt meet up at a pier somewhere. She asks about Julianne, whose mother has come to stay with her. Kelly wants to arrange a meal to send some meals to Julianne a few times a week. Matt knows of a restaurant and will handle it that afternoon, and Kelly is moved. Clip 9.
Just like that.
What?
The way you take care of things.
I'm just ordering your dinner.
And that? The way you make it seem so easy. You do that with everything. When Lauren was sick, you were patient, loving. When Patrick needed you, you were there. Now Julianne and the baby.
I hope you don't think any of that came at your expense, because we are a team and we make decisions together.
Mm-hmm. But we don't agree about this.
Sure we do. We agree that what is important, what comes first, is our relationship. And if making that relationship work means me being the best, most caring uncle that baby could ever have, then that's what I'm going to be.
I know you don't think that's the right thing to do, though.
Well, yeah, if it was up to me, I'd be the baby's father, but it's not. It's up to us.
I can't ask you to do that.
Of course you can.
No, I can't. You don't understand. I can't.
Kelly, what is it? What's going on?
I just need to be alone for a while. Think. Is that okay?
Yes. Go. Go now. Take all the time you want. Hag.
Yeah, he has no problem letting her eat the lunch that he carefully considered and bought for her. And he's like, bye.
Yeah.
Like, at this stage, it's like, okay, I'm not going to spook her. She can do whatever she wants. Like, again, great relationship. Also, they're talking about, like, Matt's decision to be a father to this child or not. Like, its mother has no say in this. Like, she does not come up.
Yeah. Yeah, she'll be so thrilled with all those pizzas coming to the apartment that she'll just let them do whatever they want to do. Okay? Not how it works.
No. Speaking of pizza, David barely gets his pants on before making it to the door to retrieve one and bring it back to the fucking room. Donna can't believe they blew off the whole day. Apparently what they were in the middle of discussing before the pizza arrived was whether she should change her name, and he thinks she shouldn't for branding reasons. There's schmoopy kid talk. No one cares. Then Kelly's all dressed up for dinner. She comes bustling into Dylan's suite to get him for their date, already mid-complaint as he opens the door. She's so flustered, she forgets his name. Clip 10.
You know what the problem is, Dylan?
I know she says Dylan, but it really sounds like John.
It really,
right?
Sounds like John. And they didn't again. Ask for another take. These are their last scenes in the series together, some of them.
Yeah.
Don't ask
play
for another
clip
take.
Again, Dave.
Don't care.
You know what the problem is, Dylan?
That sounded more like Dylan, but still. Dylan, like, are you drunk?
Yeah.
I think the problem is that you're drunk.
Perhaps.
Actually, don't blame
the
you.
The issue is, as ever, she wants Dylan instead of Matt and knows that she shouldn't and rants about that for a while in clip 11.
You're not thoughtful. I can't trust you, and you wouldn't do anything for me.
Now that is not true.
It's how I feel.
Then you gotta give me a chance. I'll make you feel differently.
No. Not if you're gonna let me down again.
Yeah, imagine that. Me with a degree in humanities.
How was it?
It was okay. Kelly. I will never let you down.
And then I guess they just go eat at Eclipse.
Yeah, it's very weird. And also, like, of all the things that she could be throwing in his face, like, I don't think, given him her reason to think that she couldn't trust him.
Yeah. Like,
he cheated on Brenda with her, but he never cheated on Kelly. If anything, she cheated on him with John Sears in season 4.
Yeah. And sort of with Brandon.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we were on a break, whatever. And then he asked her to go around the world, and she chose herself, which meant she chose Colin. Like, if anyone has grounds to be like, you keep hurting me, it's him.
Yeah, it's true.
I mean, not really, but still. Shut up, Kelly.
Yeah. So when we see them next, it's morning. They're still in the same clothes at some scenic overlook. She wraps up a call to Matt and then curses herself for fucking him over, basically. And Dylan states, presumably for our benefit, that they didn't do anything wrong. They just stayed up talking all night. And she says for the 100th time that Matt is the most decent person she knows. And Dylan wearily agrees with her, still not diming him out for cheating. And he adds that decency is not enough of a reason to marry someone. What Kelly wants more than anything is peace, she says. So he asks her to call him after she talks to Matt. So presumably what they decided off screen was that enough time had passed since Patrick's death for her to dump him after all. Great.
Yeah, it's still been, what, 2 days in Showtime?
Okay. Yeah. Seriously. So Kelly decides to keep up appearances by going home to change into dowdy brown clothes and let down her dumb updo before going over to Matt's office and gravely announcing that she thinks he should father Julianne's child because that would be the best thing for Matt. And he has known Kelly long enough to sense that this is a trap in clip 12.
But what about for us? Our wedding? Kelly, what?
I am so sorry.
Sorry about what?
I can't marry you. I know I'm gonna regret this.
No, you're not gonna regret this because that's not happening, okay? You're not backing out of this.
You deserve better than me.
Kelly, you are the
true
one I want.
Run!
I'm sorry.
Dylan put you up to this, didn't he?
No, he didn't, but he does have something to do with it.
Something to do with it. He told you about my sleeping with Amy in the desert. Kelly, it was a mistake. And no matter how Dylan spins it, it was meaningless. I would have told you myself, but I was scared, and that was wrong. But Dylan only told you so he can break us up. And I think we are a lot stronger than that.
Dylan didn't tell me anything.
Well, then who did?
You did. Just now.
Kelly.
No. Don't, okay? Just don't.
Can you honestly say that you haven't been even more unfaithful in your own way?
No. I can't.
I mean... Like, I want to give him credit for that burn because she totally has been.
Yeah.
But A, not the time when you just got busted or busted yourself. And B, if that's your point, why are you not just eager to break up?
Right.
If you're like, well, you're even worse. Like, then why are you still here?
Right.
Why didn't you drop kick her months ago?
I mean, I know he's a lawyer, but it's like, this isn't a situation where you can win her over with logic. It's like, she doesn't want to be with you. You're not going to change her mind.
No.
So
she's, whatever, Dylan dickmatized somehow.
Indeed.
Let it happen.
So that's it. She takes a ring and off and leaves it and departs. Thank God. Finally. But our suffering is not over. Dylan finds Kelly pouting on the deck since he was worried when she didn't call. And she snittily asks why he didn't tell her about Amy and tearfully accuses him of lying to her for Matt. But he says he didn't want her to be with him because she was mad at Matt, which, you know what? Makes sense.
Yeah.
Actually.
I mean, it's not the most flattering to himself to admit that, but it does make sense.
Yeah. So she claims the reason they can never be together is that he kept this life-altering piece of information from her. Like, that's the reason, not all the other reasons that she cited in the endless run up to this finale. But he thinks that when she gets some perspective on everything, she'll realize he was acting as a friend. And then she cries. Bleh. We have more story to get to. But first, we have a message for Ryan.
Ryan's sister Heidi has been begging her brother Ryan to listen to AWT 90210 since the show started. Ryan has finally waded into the fray, so Heidi wants to let him know, quote, I told you so, and to remind him why sisters are smarter than brothers. I personally have extensive experience in this department, and since my own sibling is not smart enough to listen to this podcast, I could clock him to Jersey and back, but instead, I've composed a list of 5 times sisters were smarter than brothers on Beverly Hills 90210.
Number 1. We know they're not biological siblings, but Kelly and David count, and even when Kelly was on drugs, she managed not to lose Aaron at a park because she fell asleep.
With a Kangol hat on. True. Number 2. Remember Rory and Claire, who screwed over horny Steve early in season 3 in a twin switcheroo anyone not thinking with his little head could have seen coming? Yeah.
Speaking of Kelly, her sister Joy quickly saw she should have nothing further to do with the Zipsters and beat feet after only a few episodes, unlike Steve's dumb brothers.
And speaking of Steve's dumb brothers, number 4. This is unfortunate, given the recipient of this ad's name, but literally any sister is smarter than Ryan Sanders. Yes, even Erica. And given that Erica's diversion program consisted of getting sent to London to live it up with Brenda and Dylan, we feel like she smartened up pretty good at the end there.
Number 5, and last but never least, Brenda Walsh. Is she technically smarter than Brandon? Maybe not, but she's an icon. She had far superior hair, and she got out and stayed out.
Ryan, we are sure that you are a formidable intellect, and we hope you'll stick around for some Melrose shenanigans. But either way, from Heidi and all of us, and again with this, told you so!
Moving on. At the Peach Pit the next day, we learn that the wedding party is Steve and Dylan and Janet and Kelly. Steve comments that this leaves Matt the odd man out, and Dylan declines to offer any insight. Again, no mention of Noah. Steve thinks that Dylan is imminently going to get married himself and leave Steve no one to live through vicariously. So Steve has also forgotten that Noah exists. Wedding party. Wedding planning is also happening with Felice at the beach apartment. Donna's trying to keep the scale of the wedding from getting out of control, but Felice feels pressed about getting everything done on such a short timeline, which I just want to say, it seems like it's tomorrow. Kelly says long engagements don't work, but Felice jumps straight to suspecting Donna is pregnant. Donna jokes that she is, with septuplets, and is about to birth a litter. And we also find out that Donna already has a dress, which she made herself a long time ago. How normal! Felice assumes she can just appropriate all of Kelly's wedding planning, and Kelly doesn't have a problem with it, which is also funny. Like, Kelly does not care.
Yeah.
At the club, we learn Noah has called in a favor to get Donna a great deal on her wedding booze. She gets rid of David and Noah to ask Nat to walk her down the aisle. Ask your mother, you fucking idiot. Oh, I hate this. I hate it.
Also, he's totally giving the food and the cake to the reception. Ugh. It's taken care of, were the words used.
Yeah.
Fucking business moron to the last. Good job. Seriously. Shoe polish head.
Oh, God. So we just heard two scenes ago that invitations are out, and yet RSVPs are already coming in. Sure, that's how time works. Andrea and Val are coming. Brandon is not, because he's covering the war in Chechnya. Gina got a job at Fox Sports in New York, and she has to work weekends. Brenda does not get mentioned at all. Not once.
It's really amazing. Like, Shannon Doherty really must have been a terror, or they're extremely petty, because that's amazing.
Yeah.
Although given the alternative is the video message, which, oh my God, like, absolutely no effort. He's just, you know, in stentorian voice the whole time. It's so bad. Mm. He doesn't care.
Well, we're going to hear it. It's terrible.
Yeah.
Donna wonders if they should have picked a date further in the future so that more of their loved ones could come, but she doesn't want to wait a year to be a spring bride with everyone in attendance. And she keeps saying that they've waited 10 years for this, as if she and David even talked to each other one time in season one. They did not even get together until more than halfway through season two, so it's been 8 years, barely. But fine. Mm-hmm. On the deck, Steve and Kelly hang a lantern on the incredibly outlandish events they have experienced over the past 10 years in Clip 13.
Doesn't it seem like for the longest time we've been living in a Stephen King novel? Where you're afraid to turn the page because something horrible is going to happen to somebody in the group?
I don't know. Maybe we have been. Maybe there's someone out there who's been devising this unbelievably horrific plan for us to go through. Just makes it more amazing that we survived. That after all these years, we're still friends.
Series finale feels. Mm-hmm.
At least they didn't take this opportunity to revise their relationship a 17th time.
Ugh. I know. Seriously. Supposedly, they're working on the seating chart, which is when Kelly learns that Matt won't be going to the wedding because he's moving to New York and his flight is tomorrow. And it's at this point that Dylan
works.
Shows.
Sure.
It's at this point Dylan shows up and asks Kelly to dance, obviously, so that he can call it back to it when they're at the wedding. Kelly declines, but she's obviously done being mad at Dylan and is all flirty again. Though, she adds, getting over her engagement is going to take a while, and she'll need him to be patient with her about it. He promises he will be. So how wild is Donna's bachelorette party? Well, Mrs. Teasley and Felice and Jackie are there, so medium.
Mm.
They're getting ready to play Toilet Paper Bride, which, by the way, is a shower game, not a bachelorette game. But then Andrea hits the VCR with the aforementioned video message from Brandon. Clip 14.
I'm sorry I can't be there for your wedding, so I just want to tell you how happy I am for you.
Oh, I can't believe he did this.
You and David were meant for each other. Smart guy, David. He chased you until you caught him. Congratulations, baby. And give my love to Kelly.
Is it just me, or is he still disgustingly cute?
Absolutely just you. You can barely see him, and what you can, he looks like shit. And God, just everything about the delivery is like, what? Like, why'd you agree to do it?
Yeah.
Baby. Okay. Frankie, yeah, sweet Puzik. Shut up.
It's the same tone from when he was like interim disputed president and he had to give speeches and was like just barking at everyone all the time. Like, why are you mad?
Yeah.
Anyway. The writers then show off their knowledge of show history by having Andrea serve ice cream with popcorn, a Donna favor from the Slumber Party episode.
I appreciated that.
I did too. And then Val arrives late looking pretty good as a blonde. She's quite tan, so it works. And she is carrying Sarah
a giant box of P-Shore condoms with a silver sparkly bow on it. Love it.
David's bachelor party is also bad, also attended by olds in the form of Mel and Nat, and also graced with a video message from Brandon. He jokes that he remembers the first time that David and Donna slept together and then stops himself in the middle. And again, it is so wild how this show made Donna's virginity a public matter. Like, I know we talked about it over the years, but Jesus Christ, it's so weird.
Yeah. Also, stop. Like, you don't know who's watching this.
Right. Blah. Steve has written a poem about David, but I'm not clipping that shit. This thing lists all of David's former partners, including the one he statutory raped with the line, Denise was fun. Thank you. He had to get a lawyer. So was she really?
God. Also, there are a gazillion of them. And the most recent was like a week ago in Showtime. Yeah. So maybe don't go this direction. Also, this poem is still going on in some dimension. Yeah. It is interminable.
It also has Dylan weighing in on how hot Gina was in bed, which classy. Like,
yeah, that's the bride's sister, by the way.
Yeah.
Gross.
Back to the beach where Val has brought a pin the cock on David game. Janet has just found out that when Kelly was 15, Steve was her first. They compare notes on the noises Steve makes in bed, which reminds us that Val also slept with him, and then Felice nails the cock game, which was pretty funny.
Yeah. And you could see her blindfolded and wielding a little suction cup gun in the visual aids.
Yeah, it's great.
That's way to go out strong, Catherine Cannon.
Indeed. Then Ryan shows up with a stripper who, in a hilarious gag, is a drag queen. Ha ha, gay panic, ha ha. Less said about that, the better. Then it's the morning of the wedding. Donna's nervous. Felice comes in so they can light a candle for Dr. Martin. She feels like he is there watching over her. And Val shows up at the Walsh house as David's getting dressed. She has a great job in Buffalo and sees a lot of her mother. There's a guy. But did she possibly get lost on her way somewhere else? Clip 15.
Aren't she supposed to be with the women right now?
Yes, but I much rather be with you guys.
Well, I tell you, some things never change.
Look, given that she probably left the show because Jenny Garth and Tori Spelling were cunts to her, that you acknowledge that and then you slut shame her for it in the same dialogue. Like, just please give Val one thing besides her flawless boobs, which are on excellent display in the scene. P.S. Like, really? Like, do you still have to shit on her? She left.
It really is.
It's
rude.
The last episode. Like, what is wrong with you?
Oh,
I hate this fucking show. I can't wait to be done.
We're almost there, because here it's the wedding. Erin is the flower girl, still played by the same actor from season 8. Donna's dress is not great, but not as bad as I expected. Mm. I regret to say it's strapless. Obviously, you can see in the visual aids. And I'm still annoyed that Donna had the fucking burger man walk her down the aisle instead of her living mother, but Fleece blows a kiss as Donna walks by, so I guess she also thinks the most important qualification of an aisle walker downer is that he be a man.
His
so
external
fine.
Genitalia. Yep.
Yep. I'm not going to go through every beat of the wedding because who cares? It's not like it's Dylan and Brenda. Dylan is in the middle of a reading when Matt walks in and just stands at the back of the church. Kelly's next reading Sonnet 43, How Do I Love Thee, like the true basic she is. And then it's time for vows. And again, the show's writers do not know these characters' actual history. Clip 16.
When was it that we fell in love? When we were 18? 16? Maybe 10.
Did not know each other. Also, whoever mic'd David for this scene, you suck at your job. Lavalier, look into it.
There's no we of like whatever age you both were. You are not the same age. It's established. Yeah. Donna was already 19 by Christmas of her senior year of high school. Anyway. David can't picture a time when he wasn't in love with Donna, and I guess we're supposed to believe it despite the poem we just heard listing every other broad he ever fucked. In her vows, Donna says that even though they were often apart, he was always with her. In what sense? It's what I would like to know.
Yeah, did he pass those crabs along?
Oh my God. Whatever. He's her soulmate. Rings are exchanged. They are married. Everyone cries. Fucking months makes it into the montage. Great. Congratulations to everybody. Cut to the reception at the Coconut Club that David and Donna were able to book on a weekend in spring on like 4 days' notice. Sure. Steve introduces super recording artists Eric Benet and Tamia to perform Spend My Life With You live, which is very embarrassing for the two of them.
Yeah, well, it sure is.
While this is going on, Val tells Kelly that Matt's in the lobby waiting for her, where he tells her he was on his way to the airport when he decided he gave up on her too quickly, and they have, he says this, clip 17.
What's going on in there? That was supposed to be for us. We were the ones who were going to live happily ever after. I thought to myself, I mean, what happened? Why aren't we? I mean, is it because you got scared? Because I made a complete idiot of myself one night in the desert? Because you have this unhealthy connection to Dylan? Well, people get past that. Couples get past that.
No, they don't. You got dumped, bitch. Get on the plane.
You were having problems before the desert. Like, you've had problems since the day you met because you met one episode before Dylan came back. Like, you were doomed this whole time.
Also, you were still married.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, maybe so, look back at your recent history of romantical partner selection and be like, you know what I need to not do is be married because I suck at it.
Indeed. So, however, he goes on to say he was at the wedding and watched her and Dylan doing their readings, which is when he realized that their connection isn't unhealthy. So he fucking missed his flight to come tell her she made the right choice. Like,
and Jenny Garth is making the bitchiest faces, like, yeah, such cat butt mouth. She has on all the lipstick and it's still just ass pucker city. Mm-hmm. Why did we have to sit through this? No one cares.
I don't know.
It's
like
Matt,
honestly, it's a staple of television that I'm sure I've complained about before, when like a couple breaks up and no one is upset about it, like they just both mutually decide that they don't want to be together anymore. And this is like taking that trope to the next level of him like coming back from the airport and being like, yeah, I remember when we broke up, you were right. Like, okay, whatever.
But like, she doesn't need like, to, you were wrong, but yeah, yet you were right. Okay, I'm gonna go. Like, cool story, bye.
It's so dumb, and it's not even an act out. Like, that's the series wrap on Daniel Cosgrove. It's again very mean.
Yeah, sorry buddy.
And then photos, cake, bouquet. Donna loves her friend. Dylan, as expected, repeats his invitation that Kelly dance with him, though he will wait, but she doesn't want to wait. Tori Spelling risks disaster by boogieing in this strapless dress. And we finally close with a montage of everyone on the dance floor. Our last shot of Luke Perry, he looks like he's smiling through tears. And while this episode was extremely boring and dumb, that almost redeems it. And that's the end.
You did it. I mean, we have like 15 layers of MVP and LVP to get through, but episode-wise, we did it.
We did it. So in a slight change of format, let's do the Kim challenge first.
Bad, bad, and dangerous to me.
For the last time, five ways from this episode, Dylan showed he is mad, bad, and dangerous to know.
The hair. The hair. It's bad. It's
bad. Yeah, the hair's bad.
It's dangerous to look at it. It's making me mad.
It's bad the way he talks about women when he's on the beach trying to help David with his big sand gesture. Like, if you hate women, maybe stop dating them. Just a thought. Yeah.
It's kind of bad not to know how to tie a necktie at the age of however old they're supposed to be now. 25.
Yes. Especially since we've seen him wear ties lots. So that's bizarre.
I mean, I guess it's too soon to tell him to watch a YouTube video about it, but my man, watch a YouTube video about it. In fact, go invent YouTube with your 4chan.
It's bad to still be living in a hotel, frankly. Get your own place. That's all I've got. The rest of it is like he's pretty solid. He makes a lot of good points with Kelly. He knows when to back off. This is as good an ending as we could have hoped for them,
I guess. It's really bad to still like be messing with her, I guess. Like,
yeah.
Enough. Like, you hate each other. You hate each other.
I mean, that is the most bad part for sure.
Yeah.
All right. Now, episode MVP. Felice.
Sure. Yes. Felice.
Okay. Least valuable player. Oh. The problem is that we're spoiled for choice. Yeah. I'm going to say Charles. Bad manager, bad man.
Yeah. I'm going to go with Noah.
Yeah.
Just leave. No one cares.
Yes. Least
Tuck
valuable
Ellen
player in that he
like
brought the least
and
value
run.
To the show. Okay. Season MVP. Man.
Camille.
This is a strange choice, but I'm going to say Steve. I think he showed, other than like these bad hiccups at the end with the whole selling the beat business, he came around the most and was the biggest grown up of all of them. So Steve, I think.
I think so. I mean, I don't think that's a bad choice. I just found him and Janet so like tiresome that I can't pick either of them. So I'm going to go with Camille.
Yeah, that's a good choice. Season LVP.
Oh, boy. Brian Austin Green.
Yeah.
It's called acting. Do some.
Yeah. Three-way tie between Dylan, Matt, and Kelly because every beat of their storyline was just horrible and boring to watch.
Yeah. And, like, really, you're dragging this out over... her? No.
We have a very special addendum. This came from a recent email we got from a listener named Heather Boyd. Hello, Heather. She went back and listened to our very first episode and transcribed roughly what we said about the various characters. You want to just read this back and forth?
Sure.
Helpfully supplied it.
Okay. I will begin with my first line. I will never, ever get sick of making fun of Dylan fucking McKay.
So you said who historically your least favorite character is? Dylan?
Yes. I mean, it varies. I have no use for Steve, but he never makes me that angry. He's just such a doofus. So I think it is Dylan.
Yeah, he's kind of good on this episode, actually. At least not as hateful as some other people. Who is your historically favorite character?
Brenda, I guess. She is fantastic.
Yeah, I like Brenda too, although she is a bitch. But I like Kelly for a lot of the same reasons. And probably my least favorite character is Donna. She's such a nothing, and she keeps getting worse, especially as the show goes on past the Brenda years. It becomes the Donna stroke hour.
You mean when it stopped being the Kelly stroke hour?
I will be interested to see these ratings change as we go into it. So Heather challenged us to revisit these. So let's do it for series level valuable players. Sarah, who is your series MVP?
Wow. Just a reminder that my pre-game pick was Brenda.
Mm-hmm.
Series level MVP. I take it we're talking about like main or main-ish cast?
Yeah, yeah.
Or can we freelance?
I mean,
you know I would pick Deshaun.
Of course. But I think, you know, in terms of like over across 10 seasons, it's not, that's probably may not be fair. But then I guess that wouldn't apply to Brenda either.
Yeah, it wouldn't. But like the people who were in the majority of seasons, I fucking can't. So yeah. It would probably be like, I don't feel like I can pick Susan and I don't feel like I can pick Deshaun. And
yeah.
I just think Brenda, like it just went so far downhill after she left, and I'm not sure the show was fair to her, but compared to how they treated Val.
Yep.
So, yeah, I'm going to say Brenda.
I have to agree, obviously. I mean, we've said many times, or I have, that, you know, when I've rewatched this show, I never went past the Brenda years. And now that we've done this whole process, I was right. The show should have ended with Brenda. Maybe you could say the season five, the first Val year was like worth sticking around for, but certainly everything after that has been a gross waste of everyone's time, not least the actors, honestly.
Yeah.
So yeah, Brenda, series MVP. Okay. Series LVP.
I understand why my 2015 self would have guessed that it was Dylan, but he's not even in the conversation.
No, it's really true.
He's really not. This is tough. Like Donna is annoying, but she, like you were right, she is like a nothing burger. The fluffing is also annoying, but who cares?
Yeah.
Kelly. I mean, Kelly sucks for such a long time, but she also was awesome for a period of time.
Yeah, that's the thing.
So I think it's David.
That's fair.
He is such a, when he's not like just this whatever flappy goofus, then he turns into this piss face and he never stops being a piss face.
Yeah, no, that's true.
Cheating, that's a really good choice. Rapey, piss face.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to go with Brandon, who, unlike Kelly, is just hateful the whole way through. And worst of all, we're supposed to think he's great. Like, he's supposed to be the moral center of the show. And as we've said so many times, he's like, he's just reprehensible, impossible to like, you know, strident, obnoxious, self-righteous, like just every bad quality. And most of the time he's yelling. So Brandon is my pick.
Also cannot cut a cucumber. So
great point.
Thank you.
We did it. Thank you, Heather, for bringing this back to our attention, because I never would have remembered that.
And you'll never hear us again. Just kidding. We really hope you'll stick around for the 7,000 Melrose Places we've got ahead of us, starting with this one. Next time, Jake may have a kid, Allison finds out it is in fact a tumor, and the show begins building Rhonda's exit ramp when she meets a Richie named Terrence. You might need to meet a bag named Barf when you peep our visual aids. You could see those for this and every other episode of Again With This on our website, againwiththispodcast.com, and sometimes on our Twitter account at AWT90210. Or borrow Allison and Joe's belt and head to our Patreon page. That's patreon.com/againwiththis. Thanks for the tips, Dix. It's been a hell of a ride. I'm Squeef Sarity Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Brenda Stomp, Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is the crud who sets us up, and he's David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
Hi, you know what to do after the beep-a-rooney.
And I never saw him again.
Can I have your attention, please?
Oh, no.
And this is your Flash the Cash DJ, and you're listening to KWBH. See ya!
I'm an idiot.
It sucks.
My butt.
You were spoiled.
Brandon Walsh.
What?
Thanks for the tip, Dick.
Thanks so much for wasting our time.
Well.
Okay.
All right. Stud mania out of control.
Shut up, Dylan.
Brandon, don't be such a squeef.
Yes!
That was beautiful, Dave.